I told you at the beginning of this program that it was a mind twister, that it was strange stuff we were covering, and I don't think we've disappointed in that regard. Truly mystifying and bizarre circumstances surrounding 470 or so disappearances. The true number is probably much greater. The true number of people affected by these cases certainly much greater. Thousands of family members have been affected, and we just don't have any answers. We'll go to the phone lines. We'll get your questions and comments and your ideas for what it could be, and then we'll hear what David Politis has to say. Stay with us. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. David, you've focused on national parks, national forests, places with a lot of trees, wilderness areas. I'm curious about lakes, and I ask it in this context. One of the places I filed a FOIA after our first interview dealt with Lake Mead, a national recreation area near Las Vegas here. Tens of thousands of people visit every year. A lot of people go missing, presumed drowned. A lot of the bodies never found. Any kind of indication that there's something odd regarding lakes, that something comes out of the water and snatches somebody and pulls them in?
You know, one of the things that we stayed away from was water-related deaths because we wanted to take the equation of drowning away from what we were doing.
Sure.
And so it's possible that what you're saying is true, but it wasn't something that we wanted to tackle at this point.
Well, again, we filed the FOIA, and we got the same sort of answer. We don't keep a list, which is flat-out ridiculous, you know, just flat-out ridiculous. You know, the possibilities that have been mentioned by a lot of the callers who are writing in and which were mentioned to me before include things like cults, like there are satanic cults out in the wilderness, or, you know, army military veterans who just want to disappear, become hermits, or drug dealers, you know, growing pot farms out in national forests who might be doing this. I guess there could be a blanket answer why these don't fit all of the cases because, you know, the dogs would be able to follow it or there'd be tracks of physical evidence.
And I think that for a drug dealer, a meth lab, or somebody growing weed up there, the last thing they want to do is draw attention to an area they're in. And so by abducting somebody, killing somebody, that's really one of the last things they want to do because what it's going to bring is hundreds of people and helicopters and surveillance. They don't want that. The other part of the equation is that many times there are adults, say Polly Melton disappeared in Great Smoky Mountains. She wasn't a small woman. She was, I think, 5'6", 5'7", weighed 160 pounds. I'm 6 foot. One, I weigh 200 pounds, I run every day, and I lift weights. If I tried to grab Polly Melton while she was fighting me off on a trail and carry her away, that is almost a mere impossibility for me to go more than 20 to 50 yards without putting her down and having to rest. And if you think about it along those lines where there's nothing found, someone's going to fight with me. There's going to be buttons that fall. There's going to be shreds of clothing. It's going to be hair. You're fighting for your life. None of those things are found. There's no screaming heard in a majority of these cases. There's very little heard. And to have that super kind of human effort to carry somebody away, because that, in most instances, that's what it's going to take. That's why, to me, it takes that avenue away. Unless it's a very small child. And even a 40, 50, 60-pound child, the idea of carrying them miles and miles and miles under your arm while you're walking, it's a hard thing.
Or while you're climbing a mountain. It makes me think about birds, too. You know, some of these cases that you describe in the books are a child is snatched. They're found 12 miles away over mountain ranges. Almost sounds like something big from the sky scoops them up and then drops them later. But unless it's just a small child, that'd have to be a pretty big bird.
Well, and it's not consistent with the injuries that you see on them. The injuries are more consistent with almost as though they're going horizontal through the forest because the scratches on them, when you can get down into the details, many times the scratches don't go from front to back. They go from top to bottom, if that makes sense to people. So if you think about that, a small child, say a big man carrying a child under his arms, that's almost what I visualize it to be many times. Other times, the person's found and there's just scratches, and the articles and the people say they were just scratched from head to toe. So the bird idea has been brought up to me many times. And in fact, in a crypto sense, because there's some people that believe that there's large flying birds out there that sometimes carry animals and things away, and why not people? And along those lines, again, if you get into the minutiae, the details of it, it isn't consistent with the injuries.
And not to get too far afield or too weird, because it's weird enough by itself, but, you know, the alien abduction scenario has come up again and again, and you mentioned it earlier, but are there any circumstantial evidence, any kind of indications of lights and weird things in the sky around any of these cases?
You know, George, you know this as well as I do. Is there any place in the U.S. that doesn't have reports of UFOs?
Not that I know of.
There you go.
But, I mean, does anything jump out at you? A case in Michigan or a case in Georgia where, yeah, they disappeared and witnesses say there were strange lights in the sky at the same time?
Along those lines, no. Nothing that I found. And, again, I'm one of those kind of guys that'll be looking for all that stuff. And I have had 100 emails from MUFON people and UFO people from other countries that bring up other cases to me that I haven't written about that fall along those lines. Or the people, the abduction experts that write to me and say, do you realize that what you're writing about is almost verbatim as to how an abductee feels after they're released? You know, there's that continuum where they don't remember, they don't have any, there's a loss of time, they don't remember how they got anywhere, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are those parallels that are brought up to me all the time.
People having post-traumatic stress, things of that sort, can't remember. Yeah, I see.
And I know a lot of people are thinking this, and I'll tell you, this is in the forefront of our thoughts as well. It would be outstanding to get a group of these people in a room and allow them to go through hypnosis and understand what happened to them. But from our perspective, and we've been warned of this early on when we walked down this road, we have to be very, very careful with how we approach people that have been victimized in this way. Many people will say that if we go forward and we ask them to do this, et cetera, and then we write about it later on, they're being victimized a second time and we're profiting from their loss. So if people came forward and they wanted to learn more, somebody read our books and said, boy, I'd really like to understand what happened to me. I mean, we're right there. I'll help them. We'll do anything we can to find out what happened. But it's tough for us to be the proactive one and go out and reach out to them.
And the flip side, the danger is you start exploring the idea of UFOs, flying saucers, or even Bigfoot involved in abductions. You automatically can cross off most major media at a time when you want them there to be some attention focused on this, to be taken seriously. A lot of folks are just going to cross it off their list if you go down that road.
Well, exactly to that end, when we met with the media people in Knoxville, there was never any mention of Bigfoot, UFOs. This was a straight-up factual presentation on the Dennis Martin disappearance. And it was as strange as you could get just with the facts, and those guys won't touch it.
Yeah. Well, shame on them. Going to the phones. East of the Rockies, Tom in St. Louis. Good morning, Tom.
How you guys doing?
Okay.
I was wondering if there had been any stories coming out of the Ozarks of Arkansas and Missouri, because I have a rather strange one I've never heard you guys talk about on Coast to Coast.
I think David has a real good one from Arkansas, right?
Absolutely.
I'll
tell you what. Let Dave tell his Arkansas story, and then we'll hear yours. Okay.
There's a series of disappearances right on the Oklahoma-Arkansas border, but one of the best ones involves an older woman named Gloria McDonald in an area called Queen Wilhelmina State Park. She was hiking with her husband, her son, and her son's girlfriend. And this is right after a major storm. And there was a lot of blowdown in the area. The family took off. Gloria was wearing a bright, bright yellow raincoat. They walked into the woods until they came down to a huge tree that crossed the trail. She told her husband, hey, I don't want to cross that thing. I'm just going to go back to the car, grab my purse, and visit the gift store in the park. They said, okay. So they kept walking. She turns around and walks back. When the family's done, they come back to the car, and there's her purse and all of her valuables still in the car. They ask around in the restaurant. She's not there. A huge search goes on. She's never found nothing. Nobody ever. In fact, there were some people in the parking lot that said she never came off the trail. And there was nobody else on the trail at the time. Now, the interesting part about this and several other of the cases that I write about is that law enforcement on this case focused on the husband. And this makes no rational sense to me because there's a girlfriend and the son there. They focused on the husband and thought that he did something to her on the trail. And they got detracted, and they worked on him, I guess, for about a week, week and a half, until finally he took a polygraph test, passed it, and he was wiped off the suspect list. In the meantime, Gloria McDonald is still out there in the woods somewhere, never found.
Tom, what's your story?
Well, this involves something that is told a lot in a part of Missouri in the Ozarks. It's in the southeastern part of the state. It's a particularly rugged part of the Ozarks called the St. Francis Mountains. There's a story that's gone on for a long time now about a naked lady, a young lady, and she seems to never age through time. I've heard this story since the 70s. You see her on the trail, particularly deer hunters, people, families, hiking trails. And she tries to lure them off into the woods. And she's real sweet, very attractive, very polite. But when you decline, her whole demeanor changes. I don't know if I can use her name over the radio or not, so you might want to bleep this out, or should I not even say it?
Go ahead.
She's called the Glade Bitch. And the reason for that is because, like I said, she's very polite, and when you turn down her invitation to leave the trail, go off into the woods, hey, come with me, I have a very special spot, I want to show you a very beautiful waterfall, et cetera, et cetera. You tell her no, and her whole demeanor changes. Now, people in this particular area in Reynolds and Iron County, Missouri, have reported this to the police, and she, they've looked for her with dogs, et cetera. And nobody's found anything of her. One particularly reoccurring incidence of this story that I've heard when I go down there is that there's parts of the trail where you walk, and one of the many attractions, are there are wet weather waterfalls down there, and you have to walk through areas that are rocky and they don't leave any footprints, obviously. But then there's parts where there's mud and it's a little bit of a marshy area. And you encounter this person. You say, no, get away from me. You're a crazy person. And as you walk away, you're chuckling. But then you turn around to look and you notice she's leaving no footprints, but you are. And I'm just wondering if, this kind of stuff, it sounds to me, it reminds me of Bigfoot. We can go to Africa. We can find mountain gorillas. There's only 500 of them left in the whole world. But yet Bigfoot's found in every state in the Union. And nobody's hit one with a car. Nobody's shot one with a gun. I've had a Bigfoot experience myself. It's just something that, what is this stuff?
Tom, let us, thanks for raising those questions. I guess, a paranormal aspect, a poltergeist kind of aspect. You hear those kinds of stories, don't you, Dave?
Yeah, but it's a very rare day that a poltergeist does harm, direct harm to somebody, and I've never heard of a poltergeist taking somebody permanently.
Yeah, point well taken. West of the Rockies, Paul in Modesto, my old stomping grounds. Hi, Paul.
Hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to ask the guest if he thought any of these swamp-related disappearances could possibly be related to gators. Maybe hungry gators roaming further from swamp, maybe looking for some food sources.
That's a good question, except the majority of the disappearances around swamps, the people are either eventually found alive or dead, and it's not that they're never found. And the unusual aspect to swamp disappearances that I tried to explain, I probably didn't do too well, is that the majority of the times, the kids specifically are found in areas where search and rescue is dumbfounded that they got there. So it isn't that they disappear near swamps, it's that they disappear and are found in areas that are unexplainable. Or they cross a swamp area and are found in another area, and they can't explain how they got across the swamp. So, yeah, disappearances near the swamp, I see how you could come to that. But people are eventually found. It's not that they disappear permanently near there.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Yeah, I guess the point would be, the same was with reports of bears. You know, bears do eat people on occasion. Gators do attack and eat people on occasion. But there's other kinds of physical evidence that's left that's not does not appear in these cases. So the blanket explanation doesn't work.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
I'm going to try our first-time caller, John, in Jacksonville, Florida. John, we might have to take the rest of your question after the break, but go ahead.
Hey, a quick question. I was camping with my two buddies up in Table Rock, South Carolina, and they decided to go hang out at the edge of the cliff. And when I was back by the fire, felt like there was rocks that were thrown towards me, and I don't want to say I freaked out, but I was calling them to come back to the campsite. They thought I was crazy, but
yes.
I mean, is there any?
Well, let me finish the question for you. Dave, in your Bigfoot research, you have reports of things like that where rocks are thrown, right?
Absolutely.
But no connection to the disappearances?
I've never seen any direct line-to-line. No, I can't say that.
John, appreciate the call. Dave, we've got about a minute before our break here. Are you working on a follow-up book?
You know, it seems as though it's coming together, and it's not something that myself or the people I work with are looking for, but it's just so much additional clarity comes with, say, what Whitley's given me and what other people have given me in other areas, that the picture starts to become, rather than just say, oh, he nitpicked these cases and he happened to fall together and, you know, he happened to find a stream of information that matches. I don't think so. I think that this is a continuous issue that's gone back, you know, 100, 150 years. And with this information I'm getting now, it almost appears as though that it's crossing oceans.
I don't understand that criticism that you nitpick cases. You've got 470 of them or so that fit this thing. And that doesn't seem like nitpicking. That seems like good detective work. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with as many of your questions and calls as we can get to. Dave Politis is my guest. The subject, missing 411. Much more to come. Stay with us. The question has been raised by several emailers, listeners, who want to know, does it make any difference if people are armed? There are some cases where these woodsmen, hunters, were armed and were still taken. But, of course, most of the people are not armed. I wonder if it makes any difference. We'll get Dave's opinion and get to as many of your questions as we can right after this. Stay with us. Dave, a quick question before we go back to the phones about weapons. I know from the first book that you had a couple of cases where these hunters were armed, bows, I don't know, I don't remember guns, but I wonder if it would make any difference if people did carry guns. I mean, most of the people who are taken are not armed, right?
True, majority aren't, but there's quite a number that were armed. There's one case out of northern Minnesota that falls in that eastern side. Corey Kelly was hunting in the Red Lake Wilderness. Friend left to go get some supplies. Corey was there with the friend's dog and his rifle. They were hunting grouse. His friend came back about an hour later. He was gone in an extremely swampy area, huge reeds, massive search. They don't find Corey. Starts to snow that night, hamper search efforts. So they wait a few months. The sheriff flies over the area in a helicopter. They find him 14 miles away, naked, laying in amongst a group of eight-foot-tall reeds. His gun was never found. A majority of his supplies were never found. The dog was found 2 weeks later. It slowly made its way back to the campsite, and they flushed the dog system. They didn't kill it. The dog lived, but they found deer inside of its stool. And I got the sheriff's reports on the Corey Kelly incident. It's one of the bigger narratives in the Eastern book. It's one of the greatest whodunits I can figure out.
So you suspect that even if people did have weapons, at least in his case, it wouldn't make any difference?
I think I've never heard of a case where two people together hunting disappeared. One person alone hunting, I have several of those cases, and they're some of the weirdest ones you can imagine. So I don't necessarily think having firearms is a big deterrent.
Wildcard line, Mark in Oregon. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good evening, George, and good evening, Dave. Thank you all for a great show. It's been extremely interesting. Dave, out of the evidence what you've presented here, several things have struck me is to try to determine the nature of what is going on, and probably there is one thing going on. Maybe there's some deception at work to lead people in another direction, but you have people who are in close proximity to other people. They're active. They're all alert, such as on a trail. One example or two that you gave in that category. And then the other example where people disappear, the gentleman saw his son go behind, I guess it wasn't a very large hedge, and he disappeared. I got the impression in that case that there wasn't any real way that his father wouldn't have seen him if he'd have taken off in the other direction, possibly. But you have people who are, it seems, going into another dimension because they don't make any noise. There's no actual, fear shown or anything else on a vocal level. And then you have them found later on, sometimes alive and sometimes not, but that seems to be a commonality at the outcome stage of it. But at the abduction stage of it, it seems to be not physically possible that you could actually have people taken so quickly and virtually disappear and not make a sound.
Mark raises a good point there, Dave. I mean, I'm sure you've considered the dimensional hypothesis that somehow they're taken somewhere else and then brought back.
Oh, and that's been brought up many times. It's a great point that he just brought up. And it's something that, if you're thinking outside the box, you have to consider something similar to that. But there's other cases in the books, especially in the East Coast, the Massachusetts areas and things. One case specifically, two boys are playing in the backyard. One boy comes in the house momentarily. The grandmother comes into the backyard, and she hears a scream. She runs towards a creek in the backyard, and the scream gets further away. She runs as fast as she can. Scream gets further away. This is a little tiny boy. I think he's 3 or 4 years old. And he's out running the grandmother until finally he disappears. This is one of those kids that's found dead in a swamp way in the middle of nowhere weeks later. And that screaming and further away, your knee-jerk reaction is to think, well, it's an alpha predator. It's a bear. It's a mountain lion. It's something like that. But there's no blood, there's no nothing. And when the kids finally found, there was no obvious signs of even trauma. And therein lies part of the other element in these books, is that when the people are found, many, many, if not 99% of the time, the verdict of the coroner is they died of exposure. Another one you hear all the time in the old days is they died of exhaustion. Do you ever see that anymore, George, where a coroner says they died of exhaustion?
No, I feel like that sometimes, but I haven't seen it.
But in the old days, in the early 1900s, you used to see that in reports. I haven't seen it in the 21st century.
And as you mentioned, I mean, a lot of the, at least the ones that do have some sort of signs of trauma, scratches as if they are hauled through bushes, there may be cases where it just poof, they're gone to somewhere else, but there are many, many that you detail in the books that seem to be physically snatched and hauled away through the wilderness.
Yeah, but his thought is a good thought and something that has come up before.
Yep. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Blair in Sedona. Good morning, Blair.
Hi, George. Hey, Dave, I'm one of the lucky men and women who conduct off-road Jeep and hiking tours in the Red Rock Ranger Station of the Coconino National Forest that completely surrounds Sedona. And this story has some of the elements you've already reported. I have a friend by the name of Tom Dongo
who
has numerous books on the paranormal happenings in this area. For example, from his 2000 edition of Mysterious Sedona, he writes of an Arizona State employee hiking alone in 1993 in a secret canyon wilderness here. And upon walking around a huge house-sized boulder, he came face-to-face with an alien creature that was around 9 feet tall, wearing some sort of bluish-colored uniform, had gray skin, a light bulb-shaped head with huge almond eyes, and did not move at all. It just stared back at him. The man, scared, ran back to his car, and evidently the state employee raised a lot of dust about this with local and state police and the Forest Service trying to find out what's going on, who the humanoid was, until he was told to keep his mouth shut or he'd lose his job. Wow.
Well, Dave, you had a, I'm trying to remember, you had a National Park Service guy who disappeared, right? Is that in Arizona?
That's right. Paul Fugate in, I think it's the Chiricahua National Monument. I'm probably saying it wrong, but yeah, Paul's never been found either.
Blair raises an interesting point, but I mean, that sounds unusual based on the cases that you describe in the book. You haven't seen anything like that.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Okay. Jackie in Wisconsin. Good morning, Jackie.
Hi. At the risk of sounding like some kind of X-File nut.
That's okay. You're in good company here.
I wonder if possibly there isn't a life form or a number of life forms that have evolved on this planet, or maybe the extraterrestrial, but probably have evolved along on this planet that have possibly had different capabilities. And they seem to, you have people who are taken who are treated well, and then you have people who are killed from exposure, which sounds like possibly a life form not realizing, hey, you know, they've got to have those clothes because otherwise they die or whatever. And possibly they have capabilities that, I know this really sounds weird, but possibly stealth or camouflage capabilities, like some lizards, like some fish, that can blend in with their surroundings and not be seen. And it just makes you wonder if possibly, because so much of this takes place close to water, if water isn't just necessary maybe for their biological needs, but maybe it plays a ritual in their life.
Jackie, I think that Dave has opened all those possibilities. The problem is coming up with enough proof to make it stick. Right, David?
Absolutely. I'm all ears to all these things. In fact, one thing I didn't bring up that people have pointed to as a cause, and I got a very blunt, kind of a very assertive email not too many weeks ago saying that we were idiots, that we couldn't recognize this, but that the obvious factor is reptoids were taking these people. And I don't dismiss anything on an email I get, but I'll ask a lot of questions. And I went back at them, and I said, well, point me in the direction where somebody's seen these, somebody's dealt with them, somebody has some proof, somebody can show me a picture. And then he says, well, if you can't see what's right in front of your face, you'll never figure this out. And I'm not trying to minimize the person's feelings. I'm trying, every time I ask a question like this, no matter who it is, trying to understand where their belief system was grown from.
It's a point well taken. It sort of goes back to what Blair was saying, seeing this guy who encountered this creature, gray and alien, a lizard kind of a thing. There are those kinds of reports, but trying to prove that they're related to the disappearances is another matter.
Right.
Thank you, Jackie. Marshall in Ohio. Good morning, Marshall.
How you doing, guys? I want to get straight to the point. I wanted to kind of reinforce the dimensional hypothesis. Back in the 90s, I was doing a lot of professional investigation work and meeting a lot of interesting people. One of the things we were interested in was this whole dimensional thing, not because I heard of the same cases that your guest is talking about, but we heard of other ones, particularly a couple out of Pennsylvania that an associate of mine had investigated. And one of the things that I also heard about during this time period, we were looking into this issue because we thought it was interesting and I had a physics background, is that I had heard of military and getting involved in terms of investigating some of this stuff, which connects it to the whole Green Beret scenario that he was talking about. The reason why I heard about this is because the dimensional portal idea, or if you want to talk about it in terms of mathematical terms, would be called Raymond's split. If these things are randomly happening and maybe things are coming out of them, that is a national security issue, because if they're randomly opening up and people might be disappearing into them or things might be coming out of them, you never know what's going to come out of them or where they're being connected to. And in some cases, the military has tipped off that they don't need to look into it because maybe somebody saw something that came out and that could be a big problem. One of the cases where, and it sounds so interesting, but a little kid disappeared near Sandusky, Ohio, back in 1988. And it was one of those things where the mother looked out the back window, the kid's in the backyard, all of a sudden the kid's gone. No one knows where the kid went to. There was a search and all this kind of stuff. They find the kid a few days later. He's okay. He's hungry. And they said, "We're worried." And he said, I was out in the grass of all these cows and everything. And there was like no cows around in that area. And so the indication was that he had gone somewhere else in some other realm or something through some kind of a portal and had experienced it. And that sounds a lot like some of the other things I've heard elsewhere. And all I was doing is basically keeping track of some of these stories. In particular, I know you talk about how far they go back into the past. Native Americans have talked about portals and things of this nature before. But I thought what was real interesting is that you were telling some of these stories, I found so many correlations with things I already knew about. And when I heard about the Green Berets, I said, wow, this is fascinating. The whole thing is that I never knew that there could be this many disappearances. That in and of itself is scary. That's one reason why the National Park Service probably wouldn't want to talk about this.
Good points, Marshall.
That's phenomenal.
Thanks, Marshall. Good points. Again, Dave, it's kind of stuff that you hear a lot.
Absolutely. And in fact, the cows that boy saw, I wrote a story about a boy who disappeared. And when he came back, he told the people that he had seen miniature cows.
Oh, we don't have a whole lot of those around here either.
No.
Let's try to get one more call in. East of the Rockies, Michael in New Jersey. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hi. I have two quick questions for David, and I'll listen off air. I want to know if he's ever been in contact with Butch Wachowski, who does a lot of he's also a former law enforcement officer who does a lot of researcher into mysterious disappearances along the same lines than human mutilation, notably the Todd Sees case in Pennsylvania. What are your thoughts about that? And also, has David researched the Dyatlov Pass incident from Russia in 1959, in which 10 mountain climbers were all found disappeared and then later dead under extremely mysterious circumstances that are very similar to the kind of disappearances he's talking about, including the bizarre nature of their deaths, where it appeared that they had panicked in the middle of the night and some of them were stripped naked for no reason, even though it was freezing cold. They had cut open from inside of the tent, ran in different directions, experienced outdoorsmen. One of them had their tongue ripped out at the root. They found a foot inside of a boot just inexplicably sitting there.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you. We're going to have to cut you off. I know that case. It's a pretty weird case. David, have you looked at that one?
Yes, and I've actually talked at length with Butch Wachowski in Pennsylvania and talked to him about the case that the caller called on. One of the things that I don't do is I don't take the things I read on the Internet for much value. Unless I can read the actual case file of what happened, I don't really believe a lot of this stuff. And maybe it's just the officer upbringing in me. But unless I can find multiple sources to validate what happened, I don't put a lot of salt in it. I do think something unusual happened in Russia, but sometimes it's hard to get the truth coming out of Russia.
I should point out, we've tried to get folks involved with that Dyatlov Pass case on the program a couple of times and just haven't been able to pull it off, but I'm still interested and still trying to do that. Dave, one other thing I want to touch on before the end of the program. We haven't talked about Bigfoot. You've done a whole heck of a lot of research in there, and we keep reading online that some big news might be coming. I know you're under some restrictions about what you can say, but is it fair to say that some big news regarding Bigfoot is right around the corner?
You know, you're going to hear a lot of things on the internet, and the truth of the matter is that we're going north with it. We're making progress. The PhDs that are working on this, and there are multiple, have done some phenomenal work. The progress has been made, but great discoveries take great evidence to prove them, and the route that we're taking about going through a journal to get the science community to validate the efforts made by the PhDs on our team is not an easy avenue, and no one's ever done it before. And so it's a cautious approach. It's one that has to be done correctly to be accepted. And once it is accepted, it's generally approved throughout the world as proven science. So,
well, we look forward to hearing the news, Dave. Thanks for coming back. The book is called Missing 411, 2 volumes. We have a link on our website to check it out. I hope you enjoyed yourself, Dave, and I hope we'll have you back soon. My thanks to Nathan and Gina, Tim Binall, and Dan Galante there at Premier for helping put on the program. I'll be back next month, everyone. Good evening.